Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Intolerance and injustice are words we've been hearing in connection with the turmoil in Ferguson this week. We'll be talking about the words and what they mean to some young people in just a couple of moments. But first, a Ferguson update. Governor Nixon's come to town to comment on the situation in Ferguson. He has appeared at Christ the King Church, and that's where St. Louis Public Radio's Wayne Pratt is. Wayne, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Don. Good to hear from you.
Let's get an update on what the governor had to say.
He hinted about a bigger announcement that will be coming this afternoon. He's going to have a media availability either at 2:30 or 3 o'clock, and he says there will be some, as he described it, some organizational changes relating to the investigation, and he's still putting together the particulars on that. And then he also told the crowd of about 100-125 here, that the emotion that has been expressed over the last few days, it's time for it to be used for positive and for good, and he wants to use the energy to push forward and deal with the problems even after all of this subsides.
Is there any chance, do you think, Wayne, given the fact that organization is on his mind, that there's a potential for a National Guard here? Any hints in that regard?
That question was asked this morning, and nobody really would answer it. Our Joe Manis actually asked that directly to Senator Claire McCaskill, who was here a couple of hours ago, and she really did not bite, so to speak, on that. So nobody's denying it, so I guess it's a possibility at this point, but we'll have a clear indication between 2:30 and 3 this afternoon.
How well was the governor received today? A lot of people have said he's been a day late and a dollar short in this whole episode.
He was well received here today. I think the people who have gathered at the church were just happy to see him, happy that he gave up his time to come here. The biggest applause he got was when he mentioned that he was on the phone with President Barack Obama discussing the situation here in Ferguson. So, and then after that, I should point out, it got tough for the governor because he sat down and he listened to what some of the people had to say, and they want information. They also told the governor they have no faith left in the criminal investigation process, and they're looking for changes there.
And his reaction in response to that?
He hasn't responded to that. He was sitting in one of the church pews, and he was just listening attentively and hasn't said anything beyond that at this point. He's getting set to leave now, I believe, and then we'll know more when he talks to the media just in a couple of hours.
Any indication as to what President Obama said to him?
He did not really get into specifics on that beyond passing along the fact that the president wants to congratulate community leaders and those who are trying to move forward with this volatile situation while keeping it safe and keeping the minds of the community in a positive fashion, as much as it can be, consider what we've gone through over the last few days.
Well, we heard President Obama just a few moments ago, and among the things he said was that he had full confidence in Governor Nixon to contribute to public safety. That's one of the reasons I mentioned the National Guard. And, of course, the president also called for healing and calm in that community.
And Governor Nixon also said that in the conversation with the president, that the president is willing to offer any support necessary, which could go back to maybe another possible hint here that the National Guard may be involved somehow by the time today's over.
Any activity outside of the church?
No, it's pretty quiet. A bunch of cars in the parking lot. The media is assembled. The governor is getting set to leave. No signs of unrest or anything at the church at this hour. Everybody's been inside. They've been peaceful. It's been an exchange of ideas. This coalition of religious groups plans to spend at least another hour or so strategizing about where to go from here and how to make sure we don't go through these days again. So that's the big aim of the meeting here, according to the organizers. They want to start strategizing a plan so they can move forward in a positive fashion.
Well, I guess the next step for us is to wait and see what the governor has to say at 2:30 this afternoon.
That appears to be where everything is headed. He did say here at the church that would be at 3 this afternoon, but he just may have had the times mixed up or something. But it'll be sometime during that 30-minute period, I would imagine, between 2:30 and 3.
We'll certainly look forward to what he has to say. Wayne Pratt, thank you so much for filling us in. Good to talk to you.
Thanks, Don.
The situation in Ferguson reflects more than the shooting death of Michael Brown. The unrest is also being called a consequence of discrimination and injustice. A local organization is observing its 10th anniversary this year and celebrating the scores of young people of different cultural backgrounds that has helped expose to diversity and social justice issues. The organization is Cultural Leadership. Joining me in studio to reflect on the program are its executive director, Holly Ingram, Rabbi Susan Talvey of Central Reform Congregation is a member of the Cultural Leadership Advisory Board. She has been honored by the organization for her work on diversity, inclusion, and social justice issues. We also have some cultural leadership graduates. Wynn Hawker-Benke was with Class 5 from Webster Groves High School. She attended Earlham College and is community organizer for Promo. Mikhail Smith is a Class 9 graduate from Cardinal Ritter College Prep, attending St. Louis University, and a member of Congressman Clay's Youth Cabinet. Brian Hamilton is from the first cultural leadership class. He went to Webster High and the University of Missouri-Columbia, currently senior multicultural admissions counselor at Hanover College. He will be joining us by phone in just a couple of moments. Meantime, let me thank everybody here in the studio for being with us. Rabbi Talvey, I'll start with you initially because you just got back from the Governor Nixon conference. Anything you can add to what our Wayne Pratt said?
Well, I can tell you that when Senator Claire McCaskill spoke, and she, the first thing she said was, "I can promise you we are going to demilitarize Ferguson." That was the only time the crowd really broke into applause. I think that there's this overwhelming feeling from everybody that at this point the militarization of the police is not helping. It's making people more afraid, and it's getting in the way of peaceful protest.
Some of the pictures have been quite frightening, last night in particular, with the long guns on those armored personnel carriers. They would cause fear in a lot of people, I would think.
The other thing that came up at this meeting that came up right at the end that I want to make sure people know is there was a mother there who lives in the Canfield Project, and she said she was there with her two little children, and she said, "I'm trying not to be afraid because I have to be there for my kids." She said, but when she looks out at night, she says, "I see white people setting fires in garbage cans." And there, it was said that there are some white anarchist groups that have infiltrated that are causing problems and are handing Molotov cocktails to people. So there's something big going on here. And then, of course, with Anonymous, this also came up at the meeting, this kind of cyber. I understand that the county police department's network is,
it's been hacked.
Is Anonymous's promise to make sure that we face the issues of racial injustice in our area because they see it as a national problem.
The longer this thing goes on, the more facets to the story become obvious, and some of them are most disquieting. Holly Ingram, let me turn to you with regard to cultural leadership and our subject at hand today. We'll be talking a lot about Ferguson and how it relates to the kinds of things you do, but do you feel that what is going on in Ferguson today for cultural leadership, the organization, is really a teaching moment?
That's a hard question, Don. I hadn't thought about it as a teaching moment, to be honest. I see it as a time for action. I see it as a time for our students to get involved. Cultural leadership was founded 10 years ago because people thought that we have an issue with racial segregation and anti-Semitism in St. Louis. And I think it's clear that we still have those issues today. And so I think it's a reminder. I don't know. Certainly, we are going to be learning from Ferguson and what is going on. But it is a reminder. That's the word I would use today, that we have some issues that we need to address here in St. Louis.
I know over the course of the last 10 years, cultural leadership has taken these summer trips in which the young students have been taken to the civil rights hotspots of the past all over the South and other parts of the country. And now we have one right next door.
We do. And I think many of our students have reflected, Wynn and Mikhail and others, about visiting Birmingham, witnessing the Kelly Ingram Park, where many children who protested back in the 60s were literally forced back with hoses, dogs, other methods that we're probably using more current technology today, unfortunately, to push back folks who are trying to protest and make a statement in Ferguson. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, history is somewhat repeating itself here.
Let's turn to the young people with us. Wynn, I'll turn to you for You've got a big smile on your face. I know you're not smiling about the subject matter today. But
definitely not.
Yeah. Give me your take on what's going on in Ferguson.
I really want to echo what Holly said. It's a call to action. I mean, it was Tracy Blackman at the rally on Tuesday night pointed out that this is, what was it, Amy Hunter, that this is about racism and that what's violent is racism. And, you know, what we saw 10 years ago with cultures are being founded, and what we're seeing today is that it's still a problem. You know, anti-Semitism, racism, we can't keep sitting back and saying, oh, next time it'll be better, or let's just keep talking about it. Let's keep sitting on our chairs in our living rooms and on social media, and it'll all go away eventually, or let's drown ourselves in TV, reality shows. We can't. You know, lives are being lost, not just in St. Louis, not just in Ferguson, but across the country, across the world, actually. But, you know, I think that what we're seeing here is a community beginning to reawaken to a much stronger reality. It's not news. No one's like, oh my gosh, racism? That's not the reaction. But the reaction is, I think, an additional emotional community mental push that we can't just sit down. We have to be praying with our feet, was the phrase from Tuesday night. And that means peaceful protest. That means marching. That means gathering. That means coming together. Everyone from all walks of life. That's what I see.
Mikhail, what's your take from all of this?
Well, what I take from all of this is what really stood out was that we all have to be leaders. With cultural leadership, it trains us to get together, grab an ally or two, because change, of course, is messy and you need allies, and to roll up your sleeves because it's dirty. It's a dirty job that you have to dig into because it's messy. And so really it's calling all of us, of more so, to be leaders. All the time there are many situations like this that occur, and we all have to collectively act as a group, because these situations take more than just one person. There's no need to wait for anyone to get involved, because the person you're waiting for is yourself. You can always get involved and do your part by gathering others, and also by speaking out in your community and standing up by promoting others to get involved in the situations at hand.
Now, you and Wynn have both been involved in some of the gatherings that have taken place in connection with this story. Mikhail, I'll start with you. Bring me up to speed on your role in that.
Well, Tuesday night, I spoke on what it is like to be a black male growing up in the United States. And basically what I spoke on was from my heart. I basically poured out what I went through throughout growing up, throughout in my life of being with my mother and father and my two little sisters, and just going over my day-to-day life on what happens in certain situations, on where I go places and I may be harassed, or when I try to do many different things and it's an assumption of something that's negative coming my way, that just because I am a certain skin color, that something, I'm going to do something bad, or I'm just out doing something wrong.
Has your association with cultural leadership helped you cope with this current event?
Cultural leadership really has helped me to cope with this event. It's actually pushed me more to dive into questioning, because with each question comes another answer, but there's always room for another question with that answer. So with everything that I've learned from this event and previous events that cultural leadership has taught me, is that there's never going to be, well, there's always going to be a deeper problem beyond the problem. It has to be addressed. So you have to make sure that when you're facing these problems and combating them, you have to dive deeper and deeper and deeper for the change that you're looking for.
Right. Wynn, let me turn to you. Same question.
Well, my involvement on Tuesday night was a little different than Mikhail's. Mikhail, you did a great job, by the way. It was truly awe-inspiring. I was part of the group of students from CL, from Cultural Leadership, that was helping, you know, facilitate questions, really trying to work with the crowd, helping questions get answered, because people came because they have questions. We have questions. And the panel that was gathered that night was a great diversity panel and voices, and that's really what our job was, is to engage that and to be present, because everybody counts. And it's important for all of us to be there, you know, in support of the speakers, in support of the movement, in support of acknowledging that this is not okay. This can't keep continuing.
Holly Ingram, one of the things that we have heard throughout this week in Ferguson is the fact that there is a disconnect between young people and older people. And it really seems impressive to me that the young people that you've brought along today and others are perhaps the best line of communication with what's going on.
certainly I think folks are talking about the social media, the role it's played in communicating with the situation in Ferguson. And certainly I think our young people understand diversity much better than we do as adults. And they recognize that this is an issue. This is a problem. They're standing up and speaking out. I think many adults are not sure what to do right now. They're sitting back and listening, which is good. But we're counting on our young folks to lead the way here. And I think I do want to acknowledge folks in Ferguson that I've worked with personally that I think are a tremendous resource, and I think there's much hope for us as a community in St. Louis. Gail Babcock, Heather Robnett, Dwayne James, starting the Ferguson Youth Initiative, and other programs bringing together young people, both black and white, in Ferguson to do work in community gardens. And we've reached out to the mayor and to Dwayne and others to connect our cultural leadership students and hopefully gather students from Ferguson to participate in cultural leadership. So I do think the youth voice is very, very important in this process.
I have to take a break, but I want to give Susan Talvey an opportunity to address that issue of communication between the generations. I know it's something you're interested in.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do you want to? Go ahead. Sure, please.
Well, you know, what's beautiful is that these kids get a toolbox. What they get at cultural leadership is they get strategies. We're all looking for what can we do. And these guys, they spend a whole year learning the strategies and how to talk to each other, how to talk to other people, how to negotiate their lives. And they could teach us how to do that at this point. And I think what I'm learning from this situation is there are kids in the street, and as much as I love the church, they're not coming into the church. I heard a rap song that said, "The library is the revolution." Mm. So maybe we need to start having these meetings in the libraries and going to the onto the streets and really listening to what they're saying because and how they're strategizing, because these guys, especially our cultural leadership graduates, I mean, if you heard Mikhail Tuesday night, you know he knows how to talk to people across the board. And this is something that is going to happen only if we're all at the table.
You know, I said something yesterday. I do have to take that break. But I said on the air that there are two voices being heard in Ferguson. Some are coming from inside the church and the others on the street. The problem is that those on the street are not necessarily hearing what's coming from the church.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Let's take that break now. We'll come back and continue our conversation, and we'll bring another voice into this discussion, too. We are talking with representatives from the organization Cultural Leadership, and we're talking, of course, given what this organization does and what it is, about what's going on right in our backyard in Ferguson. Back in just a moment with Holly Ingren, Rabbi Susan Talvey, and Wynn Hawker-Benke, Mikhail Smith, and we'll be joined by Brian Hamilton in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation about the situation in Ferguson primarily with members of the organization Cultural Leadership, which has worked very, very hard over the years to bring young people of diverse cultures together in order that they may better understand each other. We'll continue that conversation in a moment, but here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Tensions remain high in Ferguson days after a police officer shot and killed an unarmed teenager. Two meetings today were aimed at trying to add to the calm. Civil rights leaders and police gathered to discuss concerns about how officers have responded to protests. Meanwhile, Governor Jay Nixon joined the St. Louis Metropolitan Clergy Coalition and other civic and faith leaders for a meeting this morning. He said there will be operational shifts in the police presence in Ferguson. The governor is holding a media availability at 2:30 this afternoon, where more details are expected to be released. And President Barack Obama also spoke of the situation in Ferguson today from Edgartown in Massachusetts. He said it's time to take a step back and see how to move forward. Obama said, quote, "We need to see that justice is done." Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stopublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation. We're going to bring Brian Hamilton into the discussion. Brian is another graduate of Cultural Leadership. And Brian, it's so good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Let me have you catch up with what some of the others have already said. I'm interested in your take on what's been going on in Ferguson and how cultural leadership has helped you deal with it.
Yeah. Firstly, I guess to answer the first part of that question, my thoughts. It's a very unfortunate incident. I'm sad. I can't say that I'm exactly shocked, though. We've had this very public string of similar incidents happening across the nation. So to have it happen in St. Louis and Ferguson, I'm not, like I said, I'm saddened, but I'm not exactly surprised or shocked. How culture leadership has helped me deal with this. It's nice having that network of kind of like-minded individuals that you can debrief and vent to have those people in your phone and in your email inbox that you can, you know, that you can talk things through with is I feel extremely helpful in a time like this because it's very easy to see to take everything that you're seeing on the news and everything that you're reading online and get down and start feeling horrible and feeling like there's no possibility for change. I think it's very important to have those people in your corner, especially in a time like this.
I understand you're the senior multicultural admissions counselor at Hanover College. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
How can something like this be useful to you in dealing with the people you're associated with in that job?
Yeah, I actually had a similar conversation not too long ago with a colleague about what is the responsibility of, you know, higher ed professionals at a time like this. A lot of times you'll have, you know, school presidents or multicultural centers, you know, directors and presidents of multicultural centers that will release statements in support of legislation and, you know, other kind of things happening on a state level or a local level. And I think our responsibility is to be those thought leaders, essentially, is to kind of lead that public discourse. Not so much that the responsibility falls on undergraduate students or, you know, people still kind of in their developmental stages. It's definitely great to have them a part of that conversation and a part of that movement. But, you know, as adults and, you know, young adults like myself, the responsibility falls on us to definitely do more and, like I said, be those change agents and thought leaders and discussion leaders.
I want you to stay with us through the rest of our conversation. I have one more question for you that has already been asked of those who are here, and that is there seems to be a generational component to what's going on in Ferguson, young people and older people trying to get them in line, if you will, and again, restore calm to the community. That line of communication doesn't seem to be working too well. What is the role of young people in a situation like this, as you would see it?
Yeah, the role of young people. I mean, to take a look at, and not to sort of be cliche, but to take a look at the modern civil rights movement as we know it, with people like Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks and, you know, Medgar Evers and the Southern Leadership Christian Conference. Those were young people. A lot of that movement was led by young people. So I think it's not surprising to see the same kind of being done here. Yeah, I'm not at all surprised that the young people of St. Louis would, I mean, especially to have Mike Brown, who was 18 when this happened, to to identify with him and then take it upon themselves to really be vocal about it.
Well, it seems to be an important component of it. And Susan Talvey, I know you're nodding your head. You're in agreement with that still.
Oh, absolutely. And don't you love that these cultural leadership kids have a context? You know, I think that the history that they know, because they've been on these journeys and they have studied the issue, they know that this is nothing new and that if we're going to really make change, we have to make systemic change. And that's why this program is really such a model. It's such a great model because they know that they can be a part of the solution because they understand where we've come from and they have an idea of where we want to go. And the other thing is, St. Louis has to stop racial profiling. These kids will tell you. I'm sure Mikhail has had issues with being stopped just because he's black, not because he's doing anything.
Driving while black.
Oh, my God. I was driving from Clayton to the church, Christ the King, just now. I saw three traffic stops. Three. And every one I stopped to see. Every one of those people was black. You know, something's wrong with that. There's something wrong. We've been talking about this for years. Enough. This means stop, because nobody feels safe.
This is what is brought home, and I'll get any response, anyone who wants to respond to this, during this this particular situation is, you know, we had Trayvon Martin. We had the situation in New York City where the man was wrestled to the ground and asphyxiated, essentially. There are many officers, many situations across the country, and every time we have a situation like this, there are a lot of words, there's mm-hmm. a lot of talk, kind of things that we're hearing from here. And then the news cycle moves on and we forget about it. Holly, this is the way we do things, it seems, in situations like this.
Yeah. I want to go back and talk about how do we really create change. And mm-hmm. Rabbi Susan talked about the toolkit that cultural leadership gives students. And so I think we're at that first stage. We teach our students to stand up and speak out, mm-hmm. and we're seeing that. Mikhail is speaking out at rallies. We have other students that are using blogs and social media to share their personal experience. They're doing the Don't Shoot campaign and others. We then teach our students how to dialogue. Not only how to create a safe space for people to talk about really tough and messy issues like this one, but how to listen in that and be that good listener to create that safe space. And so I know we have students and alums that are working on ways to create that dialogue, to support the St. Louis Clergy Coalition and others that are bringing folks together for that kind of dialogue between police and community. And the final piece is really, how do you then put change in place? And we're very proud of our alums who have gone on to Choose Lives where they're looking at policy questions. Aaron Johnson is another graduate from Class 5 who received the Thurgood Marshall Scholarship at Mizzou. He is working on his master's degree in public policy with a focus on education. How do you create those policy changes so where we can overcome these education equity issues that are underlying so much of what we see today in Ferguson and other places? So I do think it's a process, and I think we're at that first step. We keep coming back to that, and the goal is to keep pushing forward. We need to get those dialogues going. Rabbi Susan has done a tremendous job of helping the Clergy Coalition and others set that stage for people coming together. And then we need some folks who can think, who can put those policies in place. How do we end racial profiling? How do we have better policing that understand the kinds of neighborhoods that can walk in someone else's shoes? So I do think we have the tools there, and I'm very hopeful. I am very hopeful, personally, that Ferguson is the community that can work with the rest of St. Louis and create the change that we so desperately need.
Let me give our telephone number and get the audience into this conversation. 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org or send us a tweet if you like at STL on air. Wynn, anything you'd like to add to what Holly has just said or the rabbi?
I'm just remembering a moment on the transformational journey during my year at cultural leadership, and we're on the bus leaving Birmingham. And at this point in the trip, you're exhausted, emotionally, physically, everything exhausted. And we were frustrated. We were frustrated at seeing how much work had gone into the movement of civil rights in the 60s and 70s and 50s and okay, before and after, right? Hasn't ended. And they were talking about what really is the next step. And Karen Kalish, the founder of cultural leadership, put it back on us. Said, well, y'all figure it out now. It's your job. You're the youth.
That's Karen.
And, yeah, it's Karen. And what we're talking about is, you know, it's the policy is good. But what is really so hard and what we were thinking is our next step in our job is the minds. You know, it's we can't just stick with policy, which is an important piece. You can't neglect it. But the next real hard journey is the people. And a lot of that is how I think college leadership graduates really engage it. You know, we do policy, but we are a living, walking example. And all of us eat, breathe, live social justice and change. And so in all our conversations with people and how we engage in social media, you'll see us engage in this and trying to change the hearts and minds. I think that really is probably the next hard step for us as a country and people.
Mikhail, you look like you were getting ready to chime in.
Yeah, I was just thinking about one of my favorite African-American leaders, W.E.B. Du Bois, and he was actually mentioned in the rally mm-hmm. about the talented 10th, which is the top 10, which is the 10% that is educated, and there is the 90% that needs help to be pulled up. And so as in cultural leadership, it kind of it prepares you actually to be a part to pull up anyone who is behind, because as Wynn said, it's about the mind. So mentally, someone who is behind or maybe has a lack of knowledge. You have to catch them up and get them up to speed so that way everyone can be on the same forefront. We can move towards the greater goal faster.
Brian Hamilton, do you want to add something to that?
I think what's important, and I'm sure it's been said multiple times out, you know, by everybody else, is that we're change agents. You know, that's kind of what culture leadership has made us into. Kids coming from all over St. Louis with different interests and different backgrounds and different, you know, destinies. We go into all different corners of the world. You know, I'm in higher education, but, you know, we have people that go off into the sciences and engineering and all these other areas. But, you know, first and foremost, we have this kind of uniting experience, this 1 year of social justice training that we have under our belt. So when we encounter those injustices and inequalities in education and medicine and engineering, because they exist everywhere, we have the tools to address them. And again, be that change agent for whatever our passion is.
It's a lot of responsibility of being a change agent.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, no one seems reluctant to accept that responsibility. Good for you guys. I have to take another break. Let's do that now. We'll come back. A lot of phone calls. I'd like to get to as many of them as we can when we come back. And we'll do that in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back as we continue our conversation with folks associated with the program Cultural Leadership. With me in studio is Wynn Hawker-Benke. Mikhail Smith is also joining us. These are graduates of the organization Cultural Leadership. Brian Hamilton is joining us by phone. Rabbi Susan Talby is also with us, as our Executive Director of Cultural Leadership, Holly Ingram. I'd like to get right to the phones and get some discussion from our audience. Let's start with Ted calling from St. Louis. Go ahead, Ted. Are you there? Ted is not there. We'll try Tim, who is calling from Midtown, St. Louis. Go ahead, Tim.
Hey, yeah, thanks a lot for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling from Midtown. I think anyone who's lived in the city for a while knows that this is not an isolated problem at all. But my comment goes more to the point of I'm very tired of people just simply dismissing the rioting and looting as if it didn't matter at all. I'm not sure we'd all be still here having these conversations if it weren't for those actions. And also, it's not random at all. The kids who burned that Quick Trip also wrote snitches on the wall. They were accusing those employees of having called the cops on Mike Brown. And also, people were not damaging homes. They were just damaging the businesses, which is what brings the police to the neighborhood. So, I mean, I'm not legitimizing everything, but I do think that those people have called us all to the table, and in large part are the reason we're still talking about this.
Tim, thank you so much for the call. In conjunction with what Tim just said, one of the most positive things that I've seen coming out of this was, I guess, the night before last on television, a bunch of young people at the Quick Trip who were working hard to clean up the mess there that had been created by others. There's always an element that comes out in situations like this that really doesn't represent anything except themselves, and they're not part of the bigger picture. They're just kind of troublemakers. Of course, I mentioned the word troublemakers. That's one of the slogans for cultural leadership is troublemakers, but troublemakers are the best kind.
It is,
Holly,
what
does that mean?
Thank you for asking. Our founder, Karen Kalish, coined the term troublemakers of the very best kind. And to get to the point of Tim, the caller, about the riots and the looting and bringing attention to the situation, when we talk about troublemakers, we're talking about folks who are doing it as the best kind, those bringing attention to the situation in a peaceful way. I do agree that the looting has caused more media coverage than we might have gotten, but I also think that there are other ways to get that attention. To do so peacefully and to be a troublemaker of the very best kind with good intentions. And so we train our students to think about how could you bring attention to a situation. More often it's been by writing and speaking out, But I think you'll see many more young people taking to the streets, peaceful sit-ins. We're reminded of the great leaders that we have in St. Louis that our students meet on an annual basis, Rabbi Susan Talvey, Percy Green, Jamala Rogers, and others who have peacefully protested by laying themselves down on a highway or climbing the arch, not burning or looting. So I think there are very positive ways to be troublemakers of the very best kind and bring attention to situations where we need to create change.
Mikhail, what do you think of media coverage of an event like this?
Media coverage a lot of times can also play on a narrative or either be a positive impact. Sometimes it can be a very negative thing, and other times it can be a very great thing. It seems that the media coverage, in a way, goes toward something of just making it a very bad thing. It's more of broadcasting the looting rather than what caused the looting or caused the riots. And it's drawing away from the real reason of why a lot of these things are happening right now.
Do you have any thoughts, Wen, on how the media handles these things and the role that it plays?
I have many thoughts. I think I would say that it's always interesting to watch media and compare different mediums of media and compare different nationalities of media and what narrative are that they focusing on and what narrative are they telling. And so like Mikhail touched on, is are they talking about the looters and the rioters? They're talking about the pieces that led to the looters and rioters. Mm-hmm. And so I don't, you know, beyond that, it's what story are we telling? And for what reason? What do we gain by the narrative that we choose to portray?
And Susan Talvey, what does the media mean today? We can look at television and listen to the radio, but there's more to it today with the social media out there.
Yeah, and, you know, I think people have to be much more discerning today than, you know, when they listen and when they make judgments. And I think people have a huge responsibility today to get to their truth and to form their own opinions and not be swayed by, you know, images that are meant to be incendiary and, you know, sell media. So I propose that all of the media and all of the police go through cultural leadership. You know, I mean, I say that a little bit tongue in cheek, but what I really mean is that we all need better diversity training. We all need to, it should be everywhere. We're not getting it enough, and everybody needs to learn from cultural leadership in how to get this toolbox.
I would also mention the concept called media literacy, which involves critical thinking so that we look at what we see and read a little more critically than we might otherwise. Let's go back to the phones. Peter joins us from South St. Louis. Go ahead, Peter.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I've got a number of things that I'd like to get out there. I'm going to just touch briefly on them, and I want to suggest that maybe NPR or KWMU could organize a series of more in-depth discussions to handle a lot of these points that are being raised. The one of the main questions is the concept of the militarization of the police seems to me like an obvious thing to anybody that there is something fundamentally wrong with having our police take on that kind of role. And specifically, I would like to have somebody try to explain what the logic and the thinking is behind presenting people who are peaceably protesting with that kind of response of rubber bullets and tear gas and things like that, instead of just merely allowing them to have the space to do what they feel they need to do for as long as they need to do it, regardless of the effects on traffic and things like that. I mean, if we can have a police officer stop traffic on a road to let ducks cross, I think we should allow American citizens to exercise their constitutional rights with the same kind of deference. And I haven't heard anybody sort of give a rational explanation for why that tactic, why that procedure is warranted, is called for, is necessary, is at all appropriate. It seems really just confusing. And I think that is, in addition to the many, many, many other factors that are going on here, one of the things that a lot of people are reacting to. Also, I would, you know, you're talking about cultural leadership and people of influence, and I think there is a failing maybe on both sides of this issue here in terms of internal culture, because certainly, you know, within the communities, maybe there are people who are a lot of bad actors and people who aren't always making the best choices. But I think within the police department themselves, there must be something amiss with their own internal culture where they cross this line from time to time between taking actions that are corrective to what seems like things that are purely emotional and punitive in their outcome. And I think, you know, the police are, they do an oftentimes wonderful thing and are heroic and brave, and maybe we need to do something more thoroughly to celebrate them and their positive.
Peter, we only have so much time on this grass, and I understand your enthusiasm for what you're talking about, but let's get the conversation going from this end and give other people a chance if we may. Right. Got it. Okay. Susan, this was something you alluded to early on, the police role in this and the look out there on the streets. Obviously, it's a concern.
Police are there to protect us. They work for us, and I don't think that's the perception in the community of people of color, and that needs to change. You know, it just needs to change. And, you know, it's not a fault of the police either. I guess they're just not getting the training that they need to know exactly what their role is. They need to keep the peace, of course. But, you know, what they're doing, the profiling that they're doing, is alienating the very people that can help them identify the bad guys. Yeah. You know, nobody wants to work with them because they're picking on everybody. If they would just work with people, then everybody would be helping because they can't do it alone. Yeah, they need us.
The county police chief said, I believe it was the county chief, Belmar, said the other day, they never drill for something like this. They never expected it to happen here. And yet, lo and behold, here we are. Any thoughts, Mikhail, about the police role in all of this? Do you want to go on record with that, or would you like to bypass it?
Well, actually, what really comes to mind is I had a conversation yesterday with my English professor, Ms. Hancock, and we talked about another protest that had went on before in downtown St. Louis. I think it was called Occupy St. Louis,
right?
And it was a very peaceful protest, and it was just people occupying downtown St. Louis space. And so that really puts a face on that protest, but the face on these rallies is causing a different reaction from the police, and that really addresses the question that was on the phone about how the police perceive and how they handle different situations based on the people who are protesting.
Yeah. Thoughts, Wynn?
I think they've hit pretty well. I think what I call it in question, honestly, is how are we equipping our police forces? And if they are to protect us and serve us, as Rabbi Talby tells, you know, why all the gear? Why all the military gear? So that's my question.
Holly, I'll turn to you. Something that Susan Talby said a couple of moments ago, with regard to what's going on and how cultural leadership could possibly be used by the police in training. Mm-hmm. I'm sure she means that, and I'm sure she knows why, but why don't you explain why that would be a good idea?
Cultural leadership is about experiential learning. So I think many times we deliver content to folks about how they can do things better, but cultural leadership engages people to understand their own identity first and foremost. Who am I? And then to hopefully understand the identities of others. And one of the most powerful experiences that our students go through early on is what we call the fishbowl experience, where students gather according to identity. Our black male youth will sit in a circle and talk about what they never want to hear people say about them again. Our white male students will sit and talk about what they never want to hear being said about themselves again. And they begin to understand themselves and their own identity, how people perceive them, and how they are beginning to or how they perceive others. And so I think the experiential learning is the key component to cultural leadership. And we're happy to sit down and talk with police officers. We'd love for them to come and interact with our students. We'd love to have them join us on the transformational journey. So we're very open to that. But I think, again, the key is experiencing walking in someone else's shoes. We can talk about this a lot, but I think people really need to walk in someone else's shoes.
Well, we're talking about police, I'm going to bring in Jesse calling from South City. Jesse, thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks a lot. Yeah, I was up in Ferguson 2 nights ago, I think, at a very, very peaceful demonstration. It was after dark. And there were cops on armored vehicles training assault rifles at us, and it was very scary. And it brought to mind a lot of the media portrayals of the demonstrations as violent, you know. None of the demonstrators have executed an unarmed kid, and we also didn't point assault rifles at people who were unarmed. And also, if anyone knows about the comments of the Ferguson police chief's wife that were posted on Facebook, I'd appreciate a comment about that.
Jesse, thanks for the call. I didn't mean to cut you off. I'm not familiar with comments from the chief's wife or any of you. Okay, well, let's move on to something else now. We'll bring in Madeline before we wrap it up. Madeline in St. Louis, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question is for Susan Talvey. I just wonder what the difference is between peaceful protests in Ferguson of people asking for human rights and equal rights, and the difference between peaceful protests in the West Bank and in Gaza, Palestinians demanding equal rights.
Madeline, thank you for the call. I think it takes us somewhat off point, but Susan, do you want to handle it?
I'll say that equal rights are equal rights, and that anything that is a something that supports anti-racism and supports equal rights and makes all of our children safe, you know. In the most recent in Israel Gaza, there were four young men, four teenage boys that you know, it wasn't because of them, but it sparked this violence. And of course, we have Michael Brown now. We have five teenage boys that whose names we know, whose families we see grieving, and you know, whatever it is we can do to promote peace and have peaceful conversations that understand that on all sides there are human beings, there are families with children who want to live in peaceful neighborhoods here and there.
Important to remember that time is winding down. I want to give each of you an opportunity to, and Brian, we haven't forgotten about you. I'm sorry we don't see you, but we'll get you back into it just a moment. I'd like to give each of you just a couple of seconds to put a cap on this. What's the takeaway, Holly Ingram?
The takeaway is to be engaged, okay? I think we've listened. I think people need to stand up and they need to speak out and they need to be ready to listen and dialogue. And I think you've got some great leaders in St. Louis. Our cultural leadership students are there. St. Louis Clergy Coalition, Rabbi Susan Talvey and others are offering opportunities. Please don't sit on the sidelines, St. Louis. Get involved.
Brian Hamilton, your takeaway.
My take is action needs to be taken on both sides. Clearly, the people of Ferguson and the people supporting Ferguson want transparency. I don't know the exact numbers, but I remember hearing about the racial makeup of the Ferguson PD and how unlike it is the racial makeup of the actual city. More transparency in police stops and police interactions with citizens, and make an actual effort to hire people that look like the citizens you're going to be protecting as a part of that force. I think that's what we need now. And also to kind of go along with that, people need to grieve. I think these protests are a form of grieving for an innocent young man that was murdered in his hometown. And they're not letting people grieve properly.
Let me get to some of the others. Brian, sorry to cut you off, but time's getting away very, very quickly. Wynn?
I just want to say that, you know, each of us who are here, who are listening, who are in St. Louis, across the world, we can be the change. You know, you don't have to go through cultural leadership, although I recommend it. But every one of us can make the impact, make it better.
Mikhail?
Well, there's always work to be done. That's what I always wake up thinking. There's never a day of rest. There's never a day off. There's always something to be done, and sitting down is never a way to accomplish it. You have to get in it either on your own or either with your allies, and you have to have advocates. You have to make sure that you tackle situations properly and constructively. Make sure you're enlightened about the situation, research about it so you can attack it in a constructive way, and making sure that you handle it appropriately.
Very quickly, Susan.
www.prayingwithourfeet.org. It's a website that the Clergy Coalition and others are trying to put all of the activities going on together. So if you have something that you're doing, I know there's a lot of young people out there working on great things. Good for you. Keep doing it and put it on the website so we can come and join you.
We want to thank you all so much for being with us. Wynn Hawker-Benke, Mikhail Smith, Brian Hamilton, Susan Talvey and Holly Ingram, thank you so much for being with us. A couple of things going on today. Ferguson Police Chief Thomas Jackson held a news conference where he explained he's met with national and local leaders of the NAACP and representative of the U.S. Department of Justice's Community Relations Bureau. Talks are ongoing. We do know that Governor Jay Nixon is going to have a statement a little bit later this afternoon with regard to some organizational aspects of the unrest in Ferguson. So we look forward to what he has to say. And, of course, President Obama has addressed the issue today, and he is, of course, calling for calm. That's all the time we have. Again, thank you all so much for being with us. I wish we did have more time. We'll be back on Monday with our Legal Roundtable panel. We hope you'll join us then. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.